I'm Justin Evangelo. This is Disenabled, the podcast where we enable people with physical disabilities. Happy to be back for another episode. Part three, my final part of the conversation I had with blind snowboarder Emily Trepanier, hopeful Paralympian within the next 4 years. In this final part, we discuss topics like nutrition, recovery, her podcast, of course, Shredding for Gold, and how she got the name Starfish on the slopes. At the risk of rambling, without further ado, enjoy. Of course, everyone talks so much about training and exercise, and I know that because of your podcast, which we'll talk about after I briefly touch on this topic, your trainers actually give you homework to do and you do it, and they speak highly of you because based on, you know, your podcast episodes. But is there any special attention paid to nutrition and diet, any strict regimen? Like, you can't go pounding back a six pack or two bottles of wine a night, and you know.
Definitely nutrition is a huge piece of it. So I actually work with my coaches a lot on the nutrition piece, because I'm pretty good with I'm pretty good with knowing what I need to help keep me fueled and stuff, but it's always good to have that extra person saying, hey, you should do this instead of doing this, or let's try this instead of doing this. Nutrition is definitely a huge piece, especially and the nutrition needs are a little bit different during getting close to race time versus if we're just training. Nutrition is going to be a little bit different, so I've definitely done a lot of work with my coaches, and we do nutrition journals, food journals every so often, so they can see what I'm eating, and so they can offer any suggestions or tips and tricks to make things just a little bit better, or say or tell me what things I'm doing really, really good with and what things I need to focus on. Because nutrition for an athlete is definitely a huge part of that whole athlete piece to it. Because if you're not giving yourself the right fuel, you're not going to be able to perform at your best. So nutrition is definitely a huge piece that we're definitely constantly monitoring. So.
Did Christmas throw a monkey wrench in that nutrition regimen?
Maybe.
Yeah, we're all guilty of it.
Maybe. I mean,
yeah.
It's okay, though. It was all good food.
Yeah, I imagine there's just tons of it, and there is, period. Yeah. That's it. That's it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's okay to fall off that a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Especially like you said, around Christmas time, it's totally fine. And I do give myself days where I can call them cheat days. But I mean, those are okay as long as you know what you need to do. And then my coaches have asked me that a few times before, what have you been eating? Or if they see something in the food journal, they're like, was that good? Did you like that? How'd you feel after? I'm a human, so I do make mistakes sometimes, and sometimes things come up, holidays and stuff, where you have to okay, let's eat this now, and then we'll be very good after again. So
it's you not can't just like beat the yourself up that though, you right? need on your board. It's balance in everything. And exactly, I'm curious too, how much time is actually given to recovery? Because again, there's the stigma of, you know, push yourself to the limit, push yourself to failure with physical training, which obviously is important. But
recovery is huge. Yeah, it's a huge piece. So I do a lot of training. And so again, that's a whole balancing piece where, how much do we train and how much rest do I need? And again, it'll vary. If it's getting close to race time, then they know I'm going to need some extra rest to make sure that I have optimal energy for getting through a race, because races take up a lot of energy, as you can probably imagine. So yeah, recovery is definitely a big piece, and self-care has definitely been a huge thing, especially in the last few years, like making sure that I'm taking care of myself. Still like training hard and stuff, but knowing when I need, like knowing how to listen to my body and knowing when I need to take some extra time for rest and stuff. I've gotten really good about listening to my body with the help of my coaches. And so I can sort, I even sometimes before they even say we need to have a little bit of extra rest, I think I need a little bit of extra rest. And so that's definitely been like a huge piece that we've been working on. Because when I first started training, I was like, go, 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 go. And I didn't want to really rest.
I was
going
to ask you about that. Is there any part of the equation that you find super difficult to actually manage or do or not do? Because
when I first started training, it was just like, go, 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 go. I will rest when this whole goal is over. And
that's not going to get you very far.
That's not going to get me very far. But yeah, it's definitely something that we're constantly like working on as a team to like know, especially with my, so my old coaches really got to know me well and what I could like, how much they could push me before I needed that before I needed to rest and or have some extra rest. And then my new coaches have been learning about that as well. I actually like connected my old coaches with my new coaches, so they've been sort of like helping them, and so they're my old coaches are kind of like acting as a resource for my new coaches, so it's been really good. But yeah, that's definitely like recovery is definitely a piece that I've had, like, I don't know. I'm the type of person who would just go, go, go. If I was allowed to, I would just continue to keep going. But I know, like, I've learned in the past few years that I need to make sure that I continue to train hard, but I also have given myself enough time for that recovery piece and for like self-care and stuff to make sure that I can continue training hard. Because if I just keep going, I'm going to burn out or I'm going to get injured.
Super quick on top of, you know, your other aspects of life too, which I imagine factor in at least a little bit.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Yeah. So it's been a learning process, but it's been a fun journey so far. So I've learned a lot about myself. So.
All right. On to the podcast, because I kept teasing it. but I want to lead into it by asking this. What's the plan to actually get you to the Paralympics? Because it's it sounds like a big part of it is contingent on publicity. Was the podcast, Shredding for Gold, linked in this episode's description, is that a part of getting the message and getting the word out there about blind snowboarding and getting it international enough so that it can become a Paralympic sport?
Absolutely. So the original plan, actually, so I had applied for what's called the Holman Prize, and it's done through the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco, California. So I had applied for that, and basically what that is for, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Holman Prize.
I think I heard it on Outlook when you did your interview with Maxwell.
Maxwell Ivey.
Yeah, that's it. Couldn't place his last name.
So basically what the Holman Prize is that anyone who's blind can apply each year. And basically if you have like a dream or a goal that you want to accomplish within like a certain period of time, you can apply to get a whole chunk load of funding for whatever it is you are wanting to accomplish. So my original plan was actually to make a website to like bridge the gap for resources for para snowboarding, specifically for blind snowboarders, because I found when I first started that I had to dig a lot for like the resources that I found. They weren't all in like one nice little website area. I had to do like a whole bunch of research online and like calling different organizations and stuff to get resources to help me. So my goal was to create a website where I could link a bunch of resources together, but also make a community for blind athletes or people who are blind who were interested in learning more about the sport and potentially becoming athletes down the road. So that was the original plan for applying for the Holman Prize. So Maxwell and I actually both, so Max had applied for the Holman Prize for something completely different, but we both had made it to the semifinal round. So Max's idea for the Holman Prize, why he wanted to apply, was to create what is now the WY Excuse Network. Mm-hmm. And so it's a podcasting network for people who are blind or people who want to talk about some aspect of being blind. And so the WY Excuse Network, he wanted to set it up and he wanted to help other people out in the world who wanted to become podcasters or who were podcasters that wanted to have, wanted to get more like viewers and supporters and stuff. So that's why he wanted the funding for the Holman Prize to help like create the WY Excuse Network. So unfortunately, neither of us won the Holman Prize, but we ended up to apply for the Holman Prize, you have to do like a 90-second pitch video that we had to put up on, they ended up putting up on their YouTube page so anyone could see them. And so Max had actually seen my pitch video up on YouTube and ended up reaching out to me and saying he had also applied to the Holman Prize as well. So we ended up chatting, like we ended up starting to chat, and we chatted over social media for a little while. And then we had a Zoom meeting and we were talking about weeks to like learn about each other's why they were like applying for the Holman Prize. And so we talked about his reason, and then we talked about mine. And then he was like, well, would you want to create a podcast for? Would you want to like create the podcast to like help with what you're doing? Cause like you can, create the podcast and like share your adventures, but also help with like networking with other like blind snowboarders and their teams and like different organizations that are out there. So I was like, ooh, that kind of sounds actually really cool. That would be really good. So that's kind of how the podcast came to be, is where we just found each other through like the Holman Prize and just like started to chat and like bouncing ideas off of each other and like brainstorming. And then I was like, well, this would be super cool to have the podcast, because suddenly we can share my adventure, but also share other people's adventures as they were working towards the Paralympics too. So
it's like the 2 or 3 degrees of separation. That's a great networking
yeah.
story at yeah. its finest, eh?
It really is. It's been working out. So the podcast itself is growing a little bit more each week. And even like the WYXT network, there was only my podcast and Maxwell's podcast on there, but now that's growing as well. There's a bunch more that are on there. There's a new podcast they're actually launching very soon on the WYXT network. There's a few actually launching very soon. So
cool. It's growing.
So yeah, definitely.
I actually tried to reach out to Maxwell right before the holidays. I should do it again, but
he was having some technical issues. So okay. His computer actually died. So he's kind of, he's got a new computer and stuff now, but he's just kind of like been learning the new computer because he had to go from Mac to Windows. So
lucky guy. All right.
Yeah. And then he just got another Mac. So he's kind of been having a bit of technical issues lately. So he's usually really good about like if someone reaches out to him.
Yeah, nothing against him. I just reached out, and obviously I heard through the Outlook episode about the WI Excuse Network and then Shredding for Gold. It was the title that caught my eye with Brian and Carrie Kajewski. I'll link that episode to down below. And I was like, Shredding for Gold, that's, first of all, that is such a freaking badass name for a podcast. And I love
that. That was so hard to come up with a name for a podcast.
Oh.
Holy crow.
Well, how many names did you kick around before? Did you, what, rack your brains
We had a whole list of names for the podcast. So I had actually asked a bunch of friends and family and, like, because some of my coaches for, like, different names that I could use for the podcast. Because I was, like, it was driving me crazy. You can literally, if you ask Max, even, it was driving me crazy. I was like pulling my hair out. So I was like, there's so many different names. I don't know which one to choose. And so eventually I was just like, okay, Max, I'm giving myself 3 days. The next time you hear from me in 3 days, I will have a name for the podcast because I have so many names for the podcast, but I don't know which one to choose. So I'm going to hide for 3 days and I will decide at the end of the 3 days what the podcast name is going to be. Because it was literally a few months until we figured out a good name for the podcast. And then I suddenly was like, okay, it's going to be called Shredding for Gold.
Beautiful. Beautiful. It's sort of analysis of the paralysis or paralysis the analysis, sorry, with that, you can put some forethought into it, but it sounds like it didn't need to be this difficult.
No, it didn't really. I was like, when I heard Shredding for Gold for the first time, I was like, why didn't I think of that sooner?
There you go. And thus it became reality. And I look forward to a bunch of future content with your new coaches and stuff. What's involved in starting to form bonds with a completely new team out west? Is there sort of a roadmap to that?
So we take it one day at a time. Obviously, with new coaches and new guides, it's a lot of team building in the very beginning. And it's a lot of work, but we knew it was going to happen. So it wasn't like I was moving out west and I knew moving out west that I would have to have I would need new coaches. So it wasn't something like I didn't know that was going to happen. I knew going into it. So I worked with all of my previous coaches on working on a transition plan. So if you can remember, when I first moved out here, I was still training with the Ontario coaches online.
Yeah, virtually.
So it was kind of like a transition process to slowly going to the new coaches at the gym here in BC. And then we did that for a little while and then started introducing the Hill coaches and the guides and stuff that was supposed to be last year, but that didn't happen. So it's happening this year. So and again, before even we got on snow, I had actually connected my old coaches with the race team that I joined so that they could sit down and chat to see what to just get a bit more background on me and what some of my goals were and stuff and what things worked for me for in terms of coaching and guiding and stuff. And then so they were able to chat with them, and then I got to finally meet my coaches and guides in person yesterday. I had been emailing some of the heads of the race team for a while and the head coach for a little while, but then yesterday I finally got to meet the new coaches. So now it's now we're in this point of time where we're just, so I'm back on snow now, but also working with the new team. So it's gonna be a lot of team building, but also getting me back to where I was before. A few years ago when I was on snow.
Up to speed, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was coming along nicely. I definitely felt a little rusty my first few runs, and then suddenly I was like, okay, I'm getting this. I'm like, things are coming back to me now. Like, things are starting to click from a few years ago. And then it's still going to take a little, like, a while to, like, gain trust and, like, that relationship with the new coaches and the guides and stuff. But we had a really good day yesterday. So I'm super hopeful, and I know it'll happen. It'll just take time, but I'm sure we're going to be a well-oiled team soon. So it'll just take some time. So, but all of the, like, the coaches and the guides are seem like they're, like, super excited to be working with me. And there's some plans of, like, having some of the Canadian snowboarding coaches coming out as well to help out for my training and stuff too. So that's pretty exciting. It's definitely not something that happens, like, overnight. You don't, like,
there's suddenly, time involved. Yeah, that element of getting to know.
There's definitely some time. Yeah. There's definitely some time involved. Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither was like you just can't suddenly, like,
athletic success or human relationships with a completely new set of people. Yeah. You know the saying, it takes a village to raise a kid. Well, it also takes
a village to raise an athlete.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes, I've said that before too.
So
that's totally true.
And there's no shortcut for that time. And curious, what does Darling think about all this? I mean, she's by your side during a lot of this. When you hit the hill, when you're in the gym.
She's so happy. She's pretty much game for doing pretty much anything that I'm doing, as long as she's with me. She's pretty happy. I've been lucky. Both of my dogs have been very adaptable to my active lifestyle. And Darling seems to thrive on busy environments and stuff. So she loves traveling around in the city and stuff. She's part golden retriever. So her trainers jokingly always told me that she's got some golden sass in her, and it's totally true. It's super, super cute, but she's definitely has some golden sass in her. So, but she's such a good little worker and loves going to the snow and loves going to the ocean and stuff. I've actually brought her stand-up paddleboarding a few times and absolutely loves it.
Right. There you go. Well, yeah. with those webbed paws they have, my God, they're like aquatic sea creatures on their own.
Basically, yeah. They want to get her on a snowboard eventually, but we'll see how that happens.
That's sort of, it's like, really? You can't hurt my guide dog. She's like my everything.
Stand-up paddleboarding is fine, but I'm not 100% sure how that would work for snowboarding.
Yeah, really?
It would be kind of cool to see her on a snowboard. I can just, like, picture her, like, standing on a snowboard with, like, super cool doggy goggles and, like, a helmet
there
and stuff.
There you go,
and, like,
just to protect her.
A cape and stuff. I don't know. We'll see.
When you're racing, I shouldn't say that. Let me try that again. When you're going down the slopes with a bunch of people, you're practicing, you're tuning up. Have you in the past, or do you wear any sort of special indicator to say that you're actually using sighted guide to help you down the mountain so that other people don't judge you and, like, flip you off and say profanities I can't say on this?
Yes. Yes, I am a huge supporter of wearing neon orange vests. So I have a vest that says Blind Rider on it. And then I actually have vests for my guides that say guides on it, so that people know, like you said, going down the hill, they're like, they know that there's a person there that is blind. So hopefully they will watch out for us. That's not 100% foolproof, and that doesn't happen all the time, but it definitely helps, and it makes me feel more comfortable knowing that people can see that I am indeed blind, because obviously I can't see them. So if I run into them,
I promise it wasn't on purpose.
But yeah, I am definitely a huge the orange vests are definitely a huge thing, that and definitely a huge, like, it's basically mandatory from I've told myself it's basically mandatory to wear that, because if I'm not wearing it, people are not gonna realize that I'm blind. So there's been only like one or two times where I haven't been able to wear my vest for whatever reason, and I feel so uncomfortable not wearing it. My confidence levels suddenly just like plummets. And like when I'm wearing my vest, I feel much more comfortable because people know what's like that.
Yeah,
I'm
you don't
blind
have to
and
worry
stuff.
About crashing into, let's say, an organic stop sign. you know.
And then the other piece of that is when I'm racing. So I don't know if you know this, but when like skiers and snowboarders are racing, they actually have race vests that they wear during a race. So it has like a number on it and like usually a time chip. So that was a bit of a struggle for a little while, because suddenly I had to wear that vest when I was racing. So I couldn't wear my blind rider vest.
Okay.
So the company that makes all of my vests, Ryucine Reflective, so they make all of the, like, everything is pretty much custom made. So my favorite person there, Amy, makes all of my vests. Amy has been absolutely amazing to work with. So she's helped me custom make all of the vests that I have for my snowboarding guides and for myself, and for like even when we're staying up paddleboarding, we have vests that we all wear. So I was telling Amy that what was happening during races, how we would have to wear race vests. And so suddenly I couldn't wear my blind rider vest. So she's like, well, why don't we make patches for you so that you can just like easily connect it to your race vest.
There you
and it
go.
Won't like,
all right.
And it won't like destroy the vest or anything, but you can still have that option of like people knowing that you're blind. So I was like, that is absolutely genius. So she made a bunch of those for me. So they're like little patches that they have like little clips on there that you can just like attach to like the race vest or to your coat and stuff. So like when I'm racing, suddenly they like, even though there's not like usually other people on the race course, but like in between races we do like training, like warm-up runs and stuff and that, but just like having those patches that I can put on the race vest, that was a huge help, because I was finding that wearing those race vests and not having that the blind rider or any sort of indication that I was blind, it was like creating a lot of anxiety and nerves for me, even though I knew that no one was on the course with me. But it was just like all that in between when I was doing like the warm-up runs and like the cool down runs and stuff, it was definitely like definitely a huge like confidence boost, and suddenly having those like patches on. So so happy that I found the company that I have creating all of my vests, and Amy is absolutely amazing. So big shout out to Amy.
Just becomes part of your uniform, your race uniform.
Basically,
that's,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds to me like, based on all we've talked about, there hasn't been too much pushback or negativity or sort of naysayers towards you or even the sport as a whole, as a parasport. Can you speak to that a little bit? Have you received some pushback or some
I really haven't received a whole lot of pushback. I would say the one thing that I have received is, because it's taking a longer than I thought for getting to the Paralympics, there's been a few people here and there, it doesn't happen very often, but there's been a few people here and there saying, well, you're not going to get to the Paralympics. It's just not going to happen. I'm like, it's going to happen. It might not be exactly the time frame that I want it to happen, but I am going to get this sport more developed, and I will work until I reach my goal. I'm not the type of person who would just like, if something comes up, I'm going to keep pushing to make sure the sport is in the Paralympics, because I believe everyone should be able to, if they want to compete in like a sport, regardless of their abilities, they should be able to compete at that level. So definitely not going to be giving up. So there's been a little bit of that over the years, but generally there's been a lot of like positive support. There's been a lot of people that have like been checking up, like asking how things are going, and they get all excited when I like tell them how things are going and stuff. But there's always that little bit of pushback saying that you're not going to get there. But I'm like, watch me.
There you go. Hey, I like that. I like that mindset. And at the end of the day, do you actually look up to any specific para snow sport athlete? It doesn't even have to be, say, an adaptive snowboarder, but do you have any inspirations that constantly keep you flying down the hill at God knows what speed?
There's snowboarders who aren't adaptive, and then there's also snowboarders who are adaptive who've actually been to the Paralympics that have really inspired me. So one of the ones that really jumps out in my mind is, his name is Tyler Mosher, and he was essentially one of the ones who helped get para snowboarding into the Paralympics for the first time in 2014. So, and he was actually an athlete and went to the Paralympics and competed at that Paralympics. But he had to work several years to get para snowboarding actually into the Paralympics. And I remember him saying how much of a battle it was to they had to like talk with the Paralympic committee and like do like a whole bunch of things to like get para snowboarding into the Paralympics. So he's always been one that I've actually really looked up to, and I'm actually working on getting him on my podcast. So
I was actually doing the same. Hey Tyler, if you're listening, man, jump on Emily's first. She's more important.
Just have to coordinate our schedules. That's the
He hasn't even answered me. You're farther ahead in the game than me. That's cool that he's actually an inspiration. I mean, this is like a Road to the Paralympics series that I'm doing, and it's shining light on sports that I hope to be in the Paralympics within the next 4 years or so. But it would actually be cool to get a few actual either ex-Paralympians or current ones as well. So that's awesome that you're actually working.
We should talk about that, because I know some of the current Paralympians that have been to the Paralympics recently and that are going to the Paralympics. So if you want any of those names,
maybe off the record when we're done here, I'll definitely snag the info from you, because you're going to be...
I have a few, so...
Cool, awesome, I appreciate it. It's like pulling teeth with trying to find contact information for these people. We'll start to wrap this up slowly but surely. Got a few more things to talk about, but at the end of the day, what keeps you going when you know that the time frame for you getting into the Paralympics may not be what you think it is? What's the game plan? What keeps you going? What is there one specific thing that you can identify, or multiple, like a few, several?
I would say, so I'm the type of person who, when given a task, when I have a goal, I'm just going to keep working at it until I am satisfied or until I like accomplish that goal. So the goal of getting to the Paralympics has been like a big thing for me. And so even though it's taking a lot longer than I initially thought it was going to be, we've we've come such a long way, even though it doesn't feel like it. We've made so much progress over like these last years that I know it still seems really far away, but I feel like it's getting closer and closer every day. And so that, I think that really like really helps, like helps, it really helps me get like continue to work on the goal that I'm working on, and just like knowing that I'm making, like knowing that I'm essentially one of the pioneers of the sport, especially like my classification, so like the legally blind snowboarding, that's a huge thing too. And so that's, again, that's something that I'm really passionate about, and I want to, like, I see the like sports in the Paralympics, and I see how many like people love participating, and I just want to make sure like there's like that full inclusion piece, like making sure if people want to compete in something or they want to do something, they have that option. They have that option to do that. So I think that's a big thing for me as well. Like making sure like everyone has like an equal opportunity to like participate in what sport they want to participate. So like, because para snowboarding is so new to the Paralympics and it's still being developed, not all the classifications are at the Paralympics yet. So I think that's like one of the big things for me is more, I want to make sure that happens so that like the future like Paralympics and stuff can have that option to like compete at the Paralympics, you know, regardless of what their abilities are. So that's a big thing for me. Like, I have always wanted to, like, inclusion has always been like a huge thing for me. I always make sure people are included, even though like regardless of their abilities, I always make sure that people are going to be included in anything that they want to be included in. So
I'm curious, because I've talked to Paralympians in the past, summer Paralympians, a rower and a goalball player, who I actually have to circle back with and see how they did, because I wasn't, again, finding stats and TV scheduling and streaming, it's tough. It's becoming tricky. A little bit more prolific, but it's still tough. It seems to me that the center for most Paralympic action, whether it be summer or winter, takes place in or around the coast, the west coast of Canada. I don't know how much you can speak to that, but I find it interesting because the rower I was talking to, she was training on the coast. The goalball team for Canada meets and trains primarily in Victoria around that area. So it's cool to think about, maybe I should, you know, hop a flight out there and given everything that's going on, and actually see part of my country. I haven't been too far out of Ontario for the entirety of my life,
and
I hope that changes. I mean, anyone I've talked to who actually visited or went out there, some family friends of mine who are going out there permanently for work and such, say when you go there, you're probably never going to want to come back to Ontario.
that's pretty accurate, I think. And I think that's what happened with me, is I came here and I was like, I don't want to come back. It's amazing out here. I love Ontario, but this is amazing. I don't know, like there were definitely resources in Ontario, but I feel like maybe there's more resources out here. There's like more organizations, I don't know if it's because one of the Paralympic Games was out here, so they did a lot of building of like infrastructure and stuff, so they have a lot of that out here already.
Cool. All right.
Because of like having the Olympics and the Paralympics in Vancouver and 2010, I believe it was.
Yeah, 2010, yeah.
So I think that's been like a huge focus ever since then, is like, because they have that infrastructure, why not use it, right? So Yeah, because they definitely did have resources in Ontario, but I think they have more out here for all like the different sports and stuff. So, because I know like I did some race camps in Ontario, but a lot of them that I had found were actually out here on the West Coast. So it's very interesting, but that's the only thing I can think of is like, because the Olympics and the Paralympics have been here. Yeah, I didn't even
consider that. I sort of forgot about that.
Yeah. That's the only thing I could think of that's why there's more out here than like not as much as in Ontario.
What does the upcoming season, hopefully, touch wood, it stays open? What does it look like
for you? Knock on some wood, please.
Yeah. There we go. What does it look like for you? The let's say the next, I don't know, four-ish months.
Lots and lots of snow time. Lots and lots of snow time, because that hasn't happened for almost 2 years. So lots and lots of snow time. Lots and lots of training with the new coaches and the guides. Doing a few local races as well. And also hopefully doing some some races across BC as well, hopefully, depending how things go, with like the new team and stuff, and continuing to work with different organizations and like the Paralympic Committee, hopefully, to help continue build the sport of para snowboarding. So it's definitely going to be much busier than what it was last year, but I'm okay with it because I haven't been on snow a whole lot, so being back on snow is already a huge it's already a huge step forward from where we were last year. So it can only get better from here on in, I figure. But yeah, it's a busy season coming up, and I'm totally okay with that, because I was honestly going stir crazy last season, and I have been going stir crazy since the beginning of this pandemic, so
not
I'm okay with this.
Not surprising. Couldn't have summed it up any better myself. Emily Trepanier, everybody, plug every possible thing you can possibly think of. Where can they find you all over cyberspace?
Okay, here we go. So we have a website for Team Starfish, and that's where you can follow my adventures for the Paralympics. It's currently still like we've done like a huge overhaul on it, so but there's definitely information up there, so you can find that at www.teamstarfish.ca. You can also listen to the podcast, and the podcast actually has its own website now as well, and that's www.shreddingforgold.com. and you can find the podcast on Google, Apple, I think we're on Spotify now, but you can ask like your Google assistant to play Shredding for Gold podcast, and it should hopefully happily play it for you. But if it doesn't, just definitely check out the Shredding for Gold podcast website, and you can like get it, you can find wherever you are able to play it there. And you can also subscribe to the podcast, and please, please, please rate and review the podcast, because we really would love to know how people are loving the podcast. We've gotten some good verbal feedback, but it would be good to have like actual feedback on how, like on like online feedback, to see like how we're doing and stuff. Because it, from what we've heard verbally, things are going really well. Like people are enjoying it a lot. But it'd just be nice to have like that, the actual feedback online to see that, and then that giving that feedback also might actually drive the podcast to more and more people. So doing it that way, so we've definitely really been like pushing rating and reviewing the podcast, so like you know what's happening. I'm also online on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Look up Team Starfish. I can also send you those links as well if that helps you. Yeah.
You're everywhere, girl. Good God.
I'm basically everywhere, yeah.
I completely forgot to ask. Who gave you that starfish name? We didn't even talk about that. God, I forgot to ask about that. Where does that come from?
Oh, it's such a good story. I'm surprised you didn't ask me there.
I just slipped my mind. I took it for granted.
That's usually one of the first questions people ask, though. But that's okay, though. So starfish. Oh, yeah. That's a good story. So when I first started snowboarding, my head coach at the time would always laugh when I fell because he was trying to figure out how to describe it to me. And he couldn't for the longest time. He was like, I don't know how to describe it to you, how you fall, but it's hilarious. And I was like, what do you mean it's hilarious? And then suddenly one day I fell and something must have clicked. But he yelled out starfish. And I'm like, huh? Starfish? He's like, yes, you fall like a starfish. Every time you fall, you look like a starfish. Doesn't matter if you fall on your side, your back, your stomach, or whatever. You always end up in like a starfish position. So your hands are out and your feet go out and you look like a star. I was like, oh, that's cool. So then I was like, then they just started calling me Starfish at the Hill. So I was like, okay, that's a really good name.
Let's do this.
So now my nickname pretty much at all the hills and the mountains that I go to, and even like when I'm staying up paddleboarding, they're like, they always yell out Starfish. I'm like, all right, this is awesome.
Well, there you have it. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule, even if it is a Sunday, to talk to everybody. And I can't wait to air this out. A lot of audio to go through, but it'll definitely be worth it. And best of luck. I look forward to, again, following your journey on all social medias, through the podcast, and especially through Team Starfish on Facebook. And there you have it. 93 minutes of audio spread out over 3 episodes. Wow. Worth every minute of it. Let me know if you enjoy the editing style that I employed in this episode. It is a little bit different. I'm not sure if anyone really notices, but this style is a little bit grittier and it actually provides a little bit more breath to the conversation. It's not as chopped up, it's not as cut, it's not as pinpoint technical as opposed to all of my previous episodes edited in a very precise type style. Obviously, I'm just still learning the ropes of audio editing, so bear with me and send me feedback on which you prefer, and I'll obviously oblige to edit in whatever style sounds best to all of you listening. All right, time for some promotions here, mostly not to do with myself. Let's see if I can nail all these. Here we go. First and foremost, I want to give big ups to my buddy Brian, co-host of the Outlook on Radio Western podcast and radio show, for putting me in touch with Emily Trepanier. He hosts the podcast and radio show with his sister Carrie. I've linked an episode down below where he and Carrie had on Emily and Maxwell Ivy Jr. so you can get a taste of Brian's amazing audio work, because it sounds a whole lot better than what you're listening to on this podcast. I do not hold a candle to Brian's work. Keep up the great work, man. I know you're listening, and I appreciate you making the connection. Linked also down in the episode's description, you can find the WY Excuse Network, hosted and created by Maxwell Ivy Jr., as well as all of Emily's social medias, and her podcast, Shredding for Gold, as well as her website. Of course, she rattled those off. I'm just racking my brains for anything I'm missing. Oh, yes, of course. You can contact me. Let's chat all things disability and or podcasting at disenabled.podcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to rate the podcast, leave a review. Let me know again about the editing style, which one you prefer. And share this episode with a friend or family member, or even an enemy if you're super spiteful. The more exposure, the better. Any criticism, constructive, hopefully, would be very much appreciated. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got some Paralympics to watch. Until next time, cheers.